96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Hello and good afternoon. Welcome to The Doctor Is In. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Jinothor Archer-Cartwright, for another exciting show for all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. I want to thank you all for listening in this Tuesday evening. I'm just trying to get my online kind of set up. And of course, that means we are on Facebook Live. We're going to be in a few moments. And that is The Doctor's In with me, Dr. D, on Facebook. You can listen in to our live program there, as well as here on Guardian Radio 96.9. Those of you who were with me last week, you know that we had Dr. Peter McCullough. He was with us last week. And we had a very exciting week. He was able to do some of the shows, get some information out, and there was a town hall meeting. And so we're going to play parts of that town hall meeting throughout the show. But we have an open line tonight, and we're also going to touch on what's going on in Shanghai in terms of lockdowns. So it'll be interesting to see that there are some areas which are still going through a lot with the COVID pandemic. And so we have to keep those people in our prayers as well. Just so much going on in the world. It's just almost hard sometimes to keep track. Let's continue to thank God that our numbers remain low and that we continue on this course of getting out of all of this. And so I'm going to open the phone lines pretty early, but we're going to listen to the beginning part of the town hall meeting so that you can get a gist of what we were talking about. And of course, that was brought to you by Optimus. And they have the full program running on YouTube. So if you want to check it out, I'm also going to mention that as well. So you can kind of load up on that if you want to. And the website also has a couple of the different recordings that were done and some of the clips from the past week. The numbers are 322-6232-325-4316 and 325-4259. People say, I always say that number very, very quickly. But of course, tonight we are brought to you by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical care needs. We have placed a sign-in sheet on our website, so you can sign up for NHI if you need to directly on the website. It provides our information and we link you up with NHI. So if you want to do it that way, you can check us out at mcsfamilymedicine.com. We are on Facebook, Medical Concierge Services, and Instagram, medical_concierge_services. And the phone number is there, 326-1521. And if you need to use WhatsApp, it's going to be 429-4880. That is the number to call. So we've got over 16,000 views on that video. And so it's doing really, really well. And it's on the Optimus Bahamas site on YouTube. And they're going to be coming out with the slide version of that pretty soon. So if you're interested in looking at the details, looking at the slides that he presented, you can take a look. You can agree, disagree. You could hypothesize, but the key is that we all are thinking and we are all having this conversation, which is extremely important to have these types of conversation. It's just good for us all. It will lead us to where we need to be if we're able to have open dialogue on things like this. So you can check out Optimus on YouTube, Optimus Bahamas, and you can find the full presentation there, as well as the slides are also being uploaded. So that should all be up there pretty, pretty soon. And you can continue to share. So I'm sure that we're going to hit about 20,000 pretty soon. So you want to take a look and see that for sure. So producer, if we could play, starting from the minute in, we could start playing that, and that's going to be for a little bit. So that's kind of for you guys who didn't get to see, you get a few minutes to listen in. And if you want to listen to more, you can check out the website. So go ahead, producer.
Discuss and to answer questions that you may have, or even hear comments that you would like to share with us all. So Optimus, what is Optimus? Optimus is a group of committed doctors, medical professionals, and pastors, and some very much legal, highly qualified legal professionals, and concerned citizens. And we banded together to promote an expanded protocol in the COVID-19 fight, which includes the use of ivermectin and other therapeutic medications. Optimus came about just from a conversation. Imagine how things can start, just a simple conversation amongst friends, colleagues, concerned citizens, just discussing as to what can we do about this COVID? Why are we so trapped? And the group exists and started with the purpose to educate, to promote preventative measures for the public, treatment strategies, and to help fight against this SARS-CoV-2 virus, and to optimize recovery. And the ultimate goal was to save lives. We have no intention, this is optimism I'm speaking of being political or labeled as anti-vaxxers, but as concerned doctors and citizens who believe greater measures are being called for than the limited vaccine-only strategy. So I'm not going to go too much more into Optimus. We're going to touch on some other things a little bit later. But I'm going to just wanted to officially welcome each and every one of you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to come here with us to hear our keynote address by our presenter, Dr. Peter McCullough. And we're going to invite Dr. Dinotra Archer Cartwright, who's going to present the introduction of our keynote speaker, Dr. Archer Cartwright. Please give a hand of applause, round of applause as she comes.
Hello, everyone. Good night. Thank you all for coming. I don't have anything written. I'm just going to talk a little bit and then introduce Dr. McCullough. At the beginning of all of this, I think we were all shocked that something like this would happen, that we would have something like COVID-19. I remember just before the country closed down, me and my husband were actually in Boston. I was going to a conference in Harvard, and at the time they were shutting down and saying, hey, we're gonna do this online. So we started to get quite worried about what was going on. At the same time, the Bahamas had its first case, and we were challenged. We were thinking, are we going to get back home before the country closed down? And we got back just in time. So it was quite a time for us all. It was the first time that many, even medical doctors, were dealing with something so new. And so there was a lot of fear involved, a lot of hesitation to do certain things. But as time went by, we started to see that there was a lot of information that was coming out. There were a lot of studies that were coming out. And so those of us who were really concerned and watching what was going on in the world, we took the time to put all that information together. And we realized that there could be a different approach to what was happening, and that there was definitely room for early treatment. As I watched people in the early days being turned away from care and not having any hope, it really made me want to know what's going on and what can we do as physicians. And my own personal experience made me feel, why are we treating people the way we would treat anybody if they came in with a particular problem? So it really took me out of that box and to look around the world. Another consultant actually forwarded me Dr. Peter McCullough's protocol and told me to take a look because I was doing research for one of our organizations into early treatment. And I said, here is a doctor who's out there doing what we should all be doing. And he's putting his knowledge and his experience out there to the world to help other people and to ensure that we're going to be saving lives. Because as doctors, we are supposed to do no harm. So I believe in the concept of informed consent. And I believe that we should do no harm. And I think we should do our best to save lives. And Dr. McCullough has been at the forefront of this from the very beginning, from publishing one of the first documents on early treatment and being at the forefront of pushing for an expanded protocol for COVID-19. He has been in the fight in the US, in the Senate, in congressional meetings, and he has been a champion for us all, and he's become a global phenomenon. So I was very inspired by what he was doing. And when I reached out to Dr. McCullough, he was very easygoing, wonderful guy. He agreed right away to do a presentation with me on the radio. And, you know, we joked and said, wow, wouldn't it be great if you were here in the Bahamas doing this right here? And it really got me to think, why isn't he in the Bahamas doing this right here? You know? And I really was able to approach Optimus and get the type of support that we needed to make an event like this happen. What a wonderful team and group of people. They were so excited to hear that Dr. McCullough was interested in educating the Bahamian people and giving a global view of what's going on with COVID-19. And so much hard work was put in there. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce cardiologists, internists, epidemiologists, and champion for our rights in COVID-19, Dr. Peter McCullough. Welcome.
It's a pleasure and a real honor, I think a professional highlight, to come here to the Bahamas. And my wife is with me, Maha. And one of the negotiated points of coming here is it had to be a little bit of a vacation. I haven't had a vacation in 2 years, and what a wonderful place to come. And in many ways, you know, we're envious of how you live here on the islands. And I know living and working here, you're not on vacation either, but at any rate, it's great to come. So as introduced, I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm a practicing internist and cardiologist in Dallas, Texas. I'm in academic practice. And so when COVID-19 hit, I was on a series of task forces for our health system. And while we were getting ready with masks and all kinds of other equipment ahead of time and how the rooms are going to be set up to take care of COVID patients, about 2 or 3 weeks into it, I said, are we going to start treating the illness in order to stop these hospitalizations, or are we just going to let them happen? And there was silence on the call, and it was almost as if doctors were paralyzed with this idea that we would treat COVID-19 and potentially take the risks of getting infected ourselves. So I think a lot of the hesitancy to treat patients was driven out of fear. Doctors, closed their offices. Before you know it, they were supported in closing their offices. They were further supported in doing telemedicine. And we had a situation where, before we knew it, patients were getting sick with COVID and they were getting no treatment early on. In fact, they were almost waiting to the very end on that last gasp and being hospitalized. And that scenario became, in a sense, a standard. And I think a very dangerous standard. So I jumped into action. And as described, I worked as hard as I possibly could to innovate with various protocols and collaborate, because none of us work in an island. And I was able to get over the finish line, the first protocol of how to treat COVID-19 patients to prevent hospitalizations and death. And independently, a French group led by Didier Rialt and a family practitioner in Monroe, New York, Vladimir Zelenko, a general practitioner in Dallas, Yvette Lozano, two doctors in South Central California, Brian Tyson and George Farid, all independently came up with approaches to treat COVID-19. A few months after that, Paul Merrick and Pierre Corey launched the Frontline Critical Care Consortium. They also came in with their ideas. So it should be reassuring to you that many people working in many different areas came up with the same concepts that we could treat COVID-19. But the first segment of the talk is actually not going to be about treatment of COVID-19. Probably the bigger issue on your mind is the vaccines. I mean, COVID's at an all-time low. I don't even know if you have any cases here today, but I can tell you our hospital, big academic medical center in Dallas, is going weeks at a time now with no patients, none. We have this army of COVID workers and ventilators, and none of it's being used. I think the bigger issue to talk about is the vaccines. So the first point I want to make is there's a historical precedent in the United States on mass vaccination. And there's been several of them. But one to recall is the swine flu pandemic, 1976. Many of you were alive. 1976, I was 14 years old. This was going on. Gerald Ford was the president. We had 220 million Americans. We had gotten to about a quarter of Americans vaccinated against the swine flu. And at 25 deaths and 550 cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a form of ascending paralysis, the program was shut down. There was no Twitter. There was no Facebook. There was no VAERS or Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. Just good old common sense concluded that we can't give injections and have people die after an elective injection. It's unacceptable in American society. Now, the deaths ultimately rose to 53 deaths, and apologies were given. There were reparations. There were payments. But the point is, it's unacceptable to have anyone take an injection electively and die. It's absolutely unacceptable. It's not something that our country has ever thought is okay to do. So there's Gerald Ford, and you know, he wanted a successful part to the presidency, and he isn't the first person who actually would want their whole career to be, in a sense, having the capstone be saving the population with the vaccine. I think this is a dream of many people. And I think right now in the United States is a dream of many people in public health that they're going to save the United States, if not save the world, with a vaccine. And with COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, the virus, and COVID-19, the illness, the one thing I think we learned relatively quickly is it's not like polio. It's not an enterovirus. We're not going to get to zero cases. So this idea of getting to zero cases is a fool's errand, in my view, because the virus is sufficiently contagious. It's a respiratory virus. We don't get to zero cases of the flu. We don't get to zero cases of pneumococcal pneumonia or zero cases of mycoplasma pneumonia. Since when do we declare zero cases? I think where the concept came from was SARS-CoV-1, the original SARS virus, which was involved China and then some cities in Canada, where it was around for 90 days and it kind of burned itself out. We did get to zero cases of SARS-CoV-1, mainly because the body's immunity was so good, and the immunity that people formed literally just shut off the ability for the virus to spread. So SARS-CoV-1, you know, came in and came out in about 90 days. And I think people in their minds said, listen, for COVID-19, we're basically going to get to zero cases. Let's lock down. Let's shut down the airplanes. Let's, you know, really you put a lid on this. And getting to zero cases became a pipe dream. Okay, new biological products. The point I want to make is we always demand safety, safety, safety. Some of you heard me on today with Juan on radio. He wanted to get into efficacy of the vaccines. What do the vaccines do? I said, no, we have to discuss safety first. We always discuss safety because if products are not safe, it doesn't matter how good they are. It's just like a car. If you have a car, no matter how much you like it, it's attractive, it goes fast. If you drive that car off the lot and 3 out of 100 cars blow up and people die in the car is not safe. It's not going to ever get into commercial production. Drugs don't go at all in commercial production if they're not safe. So we demand safety, safety, safety. This is America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is free and available to you here in the Bahamas.
All right, I believe that's the end of that clip. Like I said, that presentation is over an hour long. So if you want to get the rest of it, you're gonna have to go to Optimus Bahamas and check them out on YouTube and check it out. It's also, I think it's on my page, The Doctor Is In, so there should be a recording there as well. And if you don't see it, I'll probably upload it later. So I'm gonna take a quick break, but I'm gonna open the phone lines, 322-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. If you got a chance to listen, give me your thoughts on what you think. Did you enjoy the presentation? Were you able to come out? We had a decent crowd, and we had over almost 1,000 views that night alone, and then we're up to about 16,000 currently. So people are watching. People do want to hear another perspective on this. People want to see the data that's coming out about all of this happening, and want to take a different approach, because we're going to take a look to see what's happening in Shanghai currently with the pandemic, and we really don't want to be in those types of places. I think this is a warning sign and a lesson for us that we do have to take a different approach, or we're going to be repeating this cycle of events over and over again. And we nobody wants that. We've seen the economic burden, we've seen the mental health and health burden that has happened because of our policies. And thank God, I think, you know, we're at a point where we would be able to be stable. We can go to an endemic point and go from there. So we'll take a quick break and we'll come back. And if you want to join in with the show, you can. So we'll take a quick break, producer.
Around the world, Cleveland Clinic is recognized as a leader in healthcare. Our team of experts relentlessly pursues the best for our patients. From groundbreaking cancer research to state-of-the-art heart surgery, life-saving innovations happen here every day. When it's time to travel for your health, it's time to travel to Cleveland Clinic, your destination for care. For every care in the world. To learn more, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Wait, why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, but just a hard day. What?
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking with everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Wait, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave us boy one big, big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody's saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Transitioning to a healthy lifestyle can be difficult. At Fresh Market, we're making it easy to choose good-for-you foods with our endless selection of fresh produce and all-natural organic specialty products, moving you closer to your New Year's goals. So, if you're looking to shed a few pounds with a ketogenic or whole food diet, shift things completely with paleo or raw foods, or just simply eat healthier, Fresh Market is inviting you to feed your good. After all, what you eat is what you're made of.
Producer, I really want you to play that Guardian song. Have it, the 10-year anniversary, because it is 10 years on Guardian. Who would have thought? Time would have flied so March. So if you get that up, I wouldn't mind you playing that. If you don't have it right now, maybe a little later, let me know. But I thought that was pretty nice. We've been in air for about 3 years or so now. So this time flies, you know. So welcome back to the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Denotha Archer, here on Guardian Radio. We just listened to a clip of last week's town hall meeting with Dr. Peter McCullough. He gave us a lot of great information and a fresh perspective on what's going on worldwide with the pandemic. The numbers here are 322-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. We're going to talk about another part of the world that's seeing some surges in cases, and I guess this is the guide of what not to do. Looking at what's going on in Shanghai in China, they are having a surge of cases, and they have taken a zero COVID kind of position in which they aren't tolerating even just one case. And so they're going through really severe lockdowns right now. Their rules are very, very stringent. There is a article from Al Jazeera, and then we're going to play a clip so you can have an idea of what's happening over there, because this is not over for everybody. And a lot of people are still under very stringent policies that are really draconian in a sense. And it's important to keep an eye on all of this, because we don't want to follow in the footsteps of this kind of behavior. So this Al Jazeera article speaks to Shanghai tweaks lockdown rules amid COVID-19 surge. It says the city will be divided into three tiers depending on recent cases amid rising anger over food shortages and lack of necessities. If you've been seeing the videos online, you can hear people crying and screaming who've been locked up in their homes or who are starving, basically. So this is absolutely insane what's happening, all in the name of saving lives. I don't know what's going on. But you can see the video with persons in protective suits walking around the neighborhoods as if this is an airborne illness and you would get it that way. So not a lot of science going on there, but, you know, we've been dealing with this for quite a long time. So I'll just touch a little bit on what the article says, and then we'll listen to a clip from CNN. So Shanghai has eased a punishing citywide lockdown that it imposed to break a surge in cases. That is the biggest test of China's two-year strategy to stamp out the disease wherever it appears. Authorities in Shanghai introduced a three-tier disease control system on Monday, allowing residents in areas where no cases have been reported for 14 days to leave their homes finally. So 14 days, a lot of these people have been confined, so long as they follow health protocols and remain in their sub-district. Those living in areas where no cases have been confirmed for 7 days are allowed to collect food deliveries or take a walk at a designated time and location. City health officials in Wukaiyu emphasized the need for continued controls at a press briefing. After a long period of lockdown, it is understandable that people want to go out and get some air, and they need to go shopping for food and medicine and for medical treatment, he said. But if lots of people gather in a disorderly way, it will cause hidden dangers to our epidemic prevention work. Of the city's 17,600 communities, however, some 7,624 remain in the strictest lockdown designation, and people there are required to stay at home. Brings back some terrible memories, huh? Gu Hongyu, Deputy Security Secretary General of Shanghai Municipal Government, said the zoning would be updated regularly based on the situation in each community. Our principle, as always, is to strive to minimize the impact of epidemic on residents' daily lives, Gu told the daily briefing on the city's epidemic control situation. The Shanghai outbreak is the most severe since the initial surge in cases in Wuhan that triggered the global pandemic, and is proving to be a considerable test of China's zero COVID strategy, which relies on mass testing, quarantine, and draconian lockdowns to stamp out the virus. So there's a lot of anger over all of these restrictions because they've really gone far back into all of this. The anger over restrictions, but the Shanghai lockdown, which was initially supposed to be just a few days long, has fueled anger amongst residents who have complained about food shortages and a lack of basic necessities. We all know that lockdown policies do not work. Johns Hopkins, they've done the results, 0.2% effectiveness. That is not good enough. On Tuesday, United States said it had ordered all non-essential consulate staff to leave the city, citing the COVID response. The U.S. early advised its consulate staff to leave and also urged Americans to reconsider travel to China due to arbitrary enforcement of local laws and COVID-19 restrictions. Particularly in Hong Kong, Jilin province, and Shanghai, in an announcement that drew anger from Beijing. China was strongly dissatisfied with and firmly opposed the U.S. sides of groundless accusations against China's epidemic response. Foreign Minister spokesman Zhao Lijian said on Sunday, Guangzhou, a sprawling metropolis, where I've actually been here to Guangzhou when I was in China. So it's interesting to think about these places when you've actually been to these places and what is going on. At the time that I was in China, it was quite pleasant. It seemed very peaceful. There were beautiful parks. And so, you know, this was a place that's really seemed like a great place to be. Sprawling metropolis of 18 million people on China's southern coast is also battling an outbreak of disease and is conducting a mass testing campaign. Residents have been advised not to travel unless absolutely necessary, and the city has been closed to arrivals from the outside. Guangzhou's health commission said it had found 27 new confirmed local cases and 11 asymptomatic cases. A total of 61 infections have been reported in the current outbreak since. So you remember, there's 18 million people in this country, and they are basically locking down for a very few cases. And we see this kind of concept creeping back up in our media, in our health officials, just generally what's going on. And this is kind of the extreme of what that looks like. China is still mainly closed to international travel, even as most of the world has sought ways to live with the virus. Mainland China reported a total of 24,659 confirmed cases April 11, most of them people without symptoms. The National Health Authority said Tuesday more than 23,000 cases were in Shanghai. So symptomless cases for the most part because of mass testing. That's what really is causing these large numbers to kind of pop up. And even for a country of that size, these are not considerably large amounts. And even better, these cases are basically asymptomatic. So that means that people who just happened to be taking a test and they said, oh, you have COVID, and they got confined, and that's why they are locking down the cities. So we can see that there's this cycle of, you know, occurrence. And if you take this kind of zero COVID approach, this is the result of the type of thinking, because it's almost impossible to stop a viral infection in this particular way. And at some point you have to live with it, especially when the virulence has gone down and the actual number of cases is low and the hospitalizations are low. And thank God the deaths are low. So we have a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello. Good night.
Hi.
Miss Beautiful Asha Cartwright.
Thank you.
What's up?
I'm right here. How are you doing, sir?
Well, I'm glad you sound strong, confident. But this is the question, the purpose for my calling. I don't know, you probably could set a standard. Is the pandemic over? Because Britain...
I've gotten this question before, and what I'm seeing is there are pockets of higher cases in different places. What we have seen is countries are now defining if the pandemic is over for them. So there are a lot of countries that have dropped all of their restrictions and have realized that this is an endemic case and we are going to live with it. So we as a country, I mean, we should be promoting, especially we are a tourism industry, that we are one of the safest places to be. I would say in a lot of cases, the pandemic is over for the Bahamas, hopefully. It's not that we're not going to have any cases, But we have to look now to say that there are zero people in ICU, right? Most of our cases are mild, moderate, or asymptomatic. And we're at a point where we can almost deal with it. I think there's a lot of information out about treatment. There are even drugs that are out for treatment. And so if we wanted to take a step back and say the pandemic is over for us, I would agree with that. However, the powers that be are really kind of looking at it more globally and saying if there's any patches of cases, then we're in a pandemic. And that is something that we really should demand our health officials to define, because don't forget, we locked down for one case.
Based on what
is
WHO.
Our threshold?
Based on what the WHO said, that we in the West now in a pandemic. So what about epidemic? Do it reduce us? When you come from pandemic, so you just clear after that. You don't go back to a reduced state.
Of course you can. And that's why I say, where are our standards? Where are our guidelines? To what would that level look like? But it's very hard to kind of get to that concept when we have authorities that lock down for one case.
I understand.
One case we considered ourselves in a pandemic. It would now take health authorities to say, you know, we can tolerate this threshold of infection without compromising our healthcare system. Because you're not going to get rid of every single case. And if that is what you're trying to do, then we're going to be in a cycle of this so-called pandemic for quite some time.
But as a citizen, as an individual, I must congratulate you and the doctors throughout the country. As it relates to, even though we had one or two losses, nurses and stuff like that, it was sad. But
yes.
I must congratulate you all because we made it through. But at this point now, are we continuing to put fear in the guests? Because I think America reduces now to a three level.
We've been downgraded.
So what do it take for one to get to everything is safe, no level, you are the trap?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They have never defined that. They locked us down with one case. It's now upon us as the public to say, hey, you know what, we are living with this and we're willing to tolerate some of this. Because to me, it's already kind of endemic. The fact that our levels, so if I was in charge, I would say that the pandemic is over in the Bahamas. That we have to watch what's going on in the rest of the world. And if we want to continue doing testing as people come in, fine. But inside the country, it's safe.
I think Dr. Dwayne Sands, even our former Prime Minister, Mr. Minnis, my boy, and even our present Minister, Dr. Dagle, they would not have a problem in you considering being the Minister of Health one of these days. But last question, who determines, is it the WHO or what do you call it, the Panama? You know that?
People.
Yeah. Who really determines whereas you are clear now as a nation?
Okay. So I would say the WHO globally is accepted because they're the ones who would have said we're in a pandemic per se. But as I said, we are a sovereign nation and other sovereign nations have taken it upon themselves to say that we're moving on. So we have to decide, are we going to just continue just doing what the world is saying, or are we going to take into context where we are as a country and fill in the gaps where needed to be in our healthcare system and learn to live with the virus?
That is
a choice that we can make. We can decide to follow the WHO, but there's no gun to our head. Yes, we sign on to a lot of things.
Thank you.
But we don't really have to if we don't want to. We take advice and we take guidance.
That's
now it's upon
statement.
Us, right? So I can give you
That's
guidance, I can give
statement.
You advice, but you, even as a grown man and individual, still have to make that decision for yourself. That's the type of decision making I would like to see at the top.
That's a bold statement. I mean, what you just said as it relates to making decisions on your own, like you like you presenting something to the government, now you all have to make a decision where we at, what we can do. And that's a serious thing too, you know what I mean?
Because I think they should have that consideration, because if you can't just continually be going in a particular direction, even when the signs are saying go another way. At what point do you stop, review what you're doing, and make a pivot?
Decision. So we are the president as it relates to as an independent nation.
Well, we're not under pressure. I just think that, you know, we talk all the time about independence and all this stuff like that, but are we willing to make independent decisions? And I'm not saying to be reckless. I'm not saying to be reckless. I'm saying to put your plan in place, have a written protocol of what you have tangible goals and expectations so that everybody knows, you know, this is where we are. And we've never kind of seen that. We saw that a little bit in the pandemic. They tried to do that, but they were getting a little extreme. But have a balanced approach and take a look at where we are now and make some decisions, because you have places with a lot more cases than us that are a lot freer than us. You know, we have places like Florida and Texas that, you know, have been free for quite some time, and they've been able to maintain a minimum of cases that they treat and they take care of and not have a significant amount of deaths. Once you do that properly with good medical reference and evidence-based medicine, you can accomplish that. We can see those examples. So I hope that helps, caller. We have another caller. Caller, you're in the air.
Yes. Good night, Dr. Archer. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm going out of my mind. And I was a victim of a you know, the debit card. Somebody had a field day. Yeah. So I'm kind of like just in a deep state. You know what I mean?
You got all your cards canceled.
Yeah. But I realized it about 8 days later. So. I don't really use it unless I go by a government office and make a payment. That was the sad part about it. But I want to get on with this senseless paradigm, right? And I'd just like to ask you a question. Do you think I'm out of my mind by asking for a scientific journalist or ombudsman? Somebody to decipher scientific literature to the public so that we can form real opinions, as stated by Kristen Nordland, CDC chief spokesman, wish that the public be more enlightened on the scientific literature, right? And so I didn't get a chance to talk with you on Dwight's show, and one, I wanted to call in. My three favorite people was on there, one, Dr. McCullough, and you, right? And I couldn't get on. I was hot. Because, you know, the thing is, Dr. D.
Dwight wanted to talk. You see, he did a monologue.
No, I didn't mean with Dwight, but Juan. I wanted to get on because I told the guy that
Juan
was on the line.
Juan wanted to talk. He had a whole monologue. We had some stuff prepared. And we just sat back and we were like, okay, Juan is going to talk for the show. So
I just would like to, you know, the 10-year anniversary, I decided to call your show, and I don't want to get some things in. But, I appreciate Dwight, even though me and him had a little schism during pandemic, right? And so you all forgot and give me an opportunity, because, you know, like a lot of people reach out to me off air and just give me information and talk, and I've created a bond with a lot of people, mostly elderly, educated females, right? And so it's kind of like you have to vent, you see what I'm saying? And so I'm afraid that most people who are ignorant of the science and they're well-educated in other disciplines, they are taking it as an offense, and like there's a jealousy that people think you're calling to say how smart you are, which, and I'm offended by that, because I ride a bicycle and I'm a normal person, and I just dispense in information to open up the sheep mind. And so the fact that I'm well-read in this particular discipline, it doesn't make me better than them or whatever, but I don't want them to try to infuriate me because they don't understand the science. As you heard all the disparaging remarks that 52 has been through, trying to get the message out to the mindless, readless, thoughtless, heartless sheep, right? Because of what they said. They know who they are. And so I'm not being vindicated as yet. None of them have apologized. And so what I really wanted to ask Dr. McCullough, because I wanted him to expand on the way the PCR test can be used to suit their narrative. And he just touched on the relative and absolute risk reduction, right? But I was also vexed. But you saw the question that I had asked him, right? You remember the question I had asked him last week on your show, right?
Yeah.
He said I sounded like a doctor. But that question, a lay person could never ask that. You see, because you have to be delving into this for a while now. And so the fact that the PCR test can be manipulated to get the positive, and it can also multiply and amplify their bioparticles, right? I was upset, and I know why it's being used, because they had mandated that governments all over the world should not, or is not legally obligated to disclose the cycle threshold in which they received the positive. So my position is, in the field of facts, that no case is positive unless it is reviewed by an independent body that to say this positive was achieved at cycle threshold under 35. So as Dr. Fauci said, out of his own mouth, no viral loads over 35. Other professionals saying any viral load over 25 is not a real viral load as far as infections. And so we know that there's a disparity in the cycle threshold significance. All right? You get what I'm saying? You understand? So the thing is...
Yeah. I wish we had more of a...
So what I'm saying is, can anyone carry the government to court for them to expose all of the positive cases so we could see the cycle threshold in which they call these things positive? Because we know there was monetary incentives for these things.
I'm not sure. You have to... The medical safety, health and safety act.
I hope they're not telling you...
Hold on, 52. I don't think a lot of... we don't have a Freedom of Information Act as in the United States. Remember, that's how they were able to get the Pfizer data. They said, no, we'll give it to you in 75 years. They went to the court system. They put in an application, and they were able to get that information. It's quite different here. I'm sure that there is some means of applying. I just don't know all of that. So I'd have to consult a lawyer on that to figure out if that is even applicable.
I had responded a comment to something written by one of those, either the CDC chief or someone from the WHO. They had asked for comments. And so, you know, in comments, they actually know who you are when you're doing these comments, and so you would press anonymous. And sometimes you read things online, and then they would say, if you like it or what, and then it would be like, why are you asking me if I like it? Do you really need to know that? Like, there was something on Mugabe, Zimbabwe, the former prime minister. And so I wanted to know, why would they want to know if I like these speech? So these are the way for them to really use these algorithms to try and create a profile on someone, whether he's left or right, you know. But this is where the world is headed. But I wanted to touch on, you know, Dr. D, I just remembered that there are several types of pneumonia, right? And, you know, some there's viral pneumonia, bacterial pneumonia, and mycoplasma pneumonia, and there's other pneumonias. I don't even know how much pneumonia there is. I'm just saying that they could remember now.
Lots of types, yeah.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is the fact that my cousin died from COVID, and they said he had pneumonia. What I'm looking at is pneumonia, then it's a secondary infection of this influenza. So my question to all of you, you know, even to the immunologists over here and epidemiologists, do any of them have PhDs? What I'm saying is initially, I followed this whole scenario from the break, you know, and I'm looking at China shutting down its international, I mean, its 15 of its databases containing 22,000 species of genomic protein sequences of these viruses, right? Now, obviously, the gain-of-function research should have never been done on this particular form of influenza viruses, because they are segmented viruses containing 8 segments, which means that each segment is a mutation in a reassorted scenario where more than one subtype infects the same cell. All right?
Pull it all together, 52.
What I'm saying, Dr. D, is you need someone to combine. Listen to what I'm saying.
Let me limit what I have to say, right?
But what I'm saying is, yeah, just saying things that the public... Hello?
Sometimes you go around in circles a little bit. What I think you're trying to say is, who is going through the data? Who can bring the data to you? And I agree with you. There needs to be, but it doesn't need to be
all right, Dr. D, just let me make the final point about the situation in China. The fact that, and I just want you to comment in, because this is why I would like to speak to Dr. McCullough. You also my hero, but what I'm saying is, remember now, the real facts were that the virus has never really been isolated in a culture, in a lab. True culture isolation is true identification. So what I'm saying is, if the WHO team was not given raw data, then what are they sequencing then? That's what I'm saying is, what are they sequencing?
I think Dr. Fauci mentioned that they got...
I don't want to hear them with Dr. Fauci because
world is working with. They're working with a sequence that was given to them from the Chinese.
Yeah, but I'm saying I have a clip with Dr. Fauci saying that innate immunity and you don't need to be vaccinated about 10, 15 years ago, but he doesn't know that this video resurfaced. So all they're feeding us is subterfuge, all right? That's all they're doing, Dr. D. And so we still be in, all right, we know we have reached a state of endemic equilibrium, right? We know this is the epidemic, right? And the thing is, we have to learn to live with this virus. And so,
yes.
You made a statement that we shut down with one case. That shows you that this was a global rehearsal and a psychological global psyops. Have a good night, Dr. D. Bless.
Okay, 52. Always spirited, always lots to say. Oh, we just need to just pull it all together. But what 52 is really talking about is like, who's going through the data? Who's going to bring all of that information to us? What I would have done is I would have put together a task force of doctors, scientists, the best of the Bahamas that would just go through all of the information as it come out. There's something called preprint studies that we look at. These are the studies as they're done in real time, as they're just done. They're published in a sense for people to review and they get peer reviewed. That is the data that we really needed to be looking at in order to be on top of this. So in order to do that, you need a group of people who are just going to be dedicated to that. And that way, you know, you can take guidance from the World Health Organization and these other groups, but you will also have your own team of experts who would be able to look at this information for themselves. Because what's really coming out is, as we see the dumps of information from Pfizer, is it's very unlikely that all of this information was read and properly assessed and all of that stuff like that. And that is a large organization with paid people. So we're really kind of seeing that the information may not have been looked at as thoroughly as we would have liked. And we had to do our due diligence as a country to really kind of do that. I don't know the full depth of what our team was doing. I know people were working very hard. I commend all the healthcare workers for what they have done through COVID, because it was an immense job and people were fearful. And so those nurses and doctors who were on the front line for over a year with no real treatment, no real understanding of what was going on, those people are our heroes. And we have to commend that our Bahamians were able to do a lot of that. Do I think things could have been done a lot better? Yes. However, I commend those who sacrificed their time and even for some people their lives to be there to take care of the community and those who were ill and needed help. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And it really put our pledges to humanity and our patients, it really, really put that to the test. Because in a sense, you are asking people to go forward and do something that they weren't sure of. And a lot of times they weren't even really compensated for in a sense as well as they should be. And so I really want to commend everybody who participated, all the essential services people, you know, because I think we're coming out of this and I think there is going to be light at the end of the tunnel, but we have to keep the perspective of what is going to be best for us. We've seen what lockdowns have done. We've seen what these extreme measures have done. We have realized that they do not help in the fight against COVID. We have realized that mandates do not help in the fight against COVID. And we need to refocus and be prepared, because it's not just COVID out there. There's so many different things. Are we prepared? Have we filled our healthcare gaps? And are there things that we could be doing to prepare us for the future? But in the meantime, I think we're out of the worst of it. I would hope so. I pray so. And I want the numbers to continue to be low and to go down, but they will probably never be zero. And so if we're looking for zero, we're going to be on this roller coaster for quite some time. Somebody has to be brave and make the decision that we're going to deal with this within our own context, but still be vigilant to what's happening in the world. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that shows strength and leadership. And I think that's what the people are looking for, a logical, strategic step forward. You know, we're tired of things not making sense. We're tired of you telling us to do this and to do that, and it doesn't make sense. The data is out there. The information is out there. The evidence is plain before us, and we can see it, okay? So all the crazy rules, all the back and forth just needs to end. You have to make logical and clear decisions that make sense to people, because people aren't going to tolerate that type of thing anymore. And I really don't blame them. We have to be smart. We have to be evidence-based. And we have to move forward in a manner that protects the Bahamian citizens. And that means looking at this a lot more openly, being open for discussion, being open for other points of views. How can we take one point of view and think that we're doing everything appropriately? It's just not possible. Discussion, debate, analysis. We've got 2 minutes, caller. All right, we're going to take you, and we're going to end with this caller. Caller, you on the air?
Yes. How are you doing, Dr. Archer?
Okay, caller, you got like 30 seconds.
Yeah, okay, 30 seconds. My irony or ironic question to you is, knowing that this COVID thing isn't over yet, and like persons can go to war without getting COVID tests or to fly on those planes and everything, and I mean, it's like it takes the war to basically end this whole thing. I mean, from its inception, because when we look at history, when you have recession and pandemics and stuff, only time we get out of them and come back to normal is after war. But I mean, what I'm saying is that, you know, if this COVID thing is so real, why is it that when the persons who wanted to go to war, they didn't stick the thing in their nose and say, you have COVID for 2 weeks, and then you go after you have COVID? You understand what I'm saying? So, I mean, the whole thing is, I mean, I guess the war is showing that the whole thing was basically a sham. It's a fair tactic to you put people in fear of their lives and everything. You lock them down, and then you put the boogerman out there, put the police everything, and then, you know, make it look as well. It seems to be real when it's really fear that has driven the whole thing. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I agree with you somewhat. I think COVID, in the sense of something was out there, is kind of real. However, I think the way that they approached it created the type of fear and hysteria that allowed them to take control in ways that we would not have allowed if we were not in the fear of our lives. And I think you've heard very important people say, you know, you don't let a good crisis go to waste. And so I think they saw a moment of crisis and they decided, hey, we can take this opportunity to do some things that we really wanted to do. So sadly, it did take a war for us to be distracted enough for our policies to stop aligning with all the fair tactics. For a moment, they're still trying to do it now. So we have to be vigilant and we have to take care of ourselves and we have to take care of our health, because that is really it. Keep your immune system strong, keep healthy, Bahamas, and that will be one of the most important things to keep you safe. So I want to thank everybody that called in tonight. We didn't get to our clip, but we had some great comments from our listeners. And so I want to thank you all. Brought to you by Medical Concierge Services, the Doctor's In with me, Dr. D. Archer. We'll see you next week, Tuesday, on The Guardian Radio 96.9. Good night.
Ah, boy. Music for the station. Nope, dinette. Guardian. That's the
Thanks for listening to Guardian Radio as we celebrate 10 years on the air.
Celebrating 1-0, 10 years with Guardian Radio. 1-0, a decade with Guardian Radio.
Celebrating.